Right, this is a bit before the theme music. It's your favourite part. Right, this week, I want to tell you, I am eating a lollipop while I do the podcast, right? So here it goes. I'm unwrapping it. Can you hear that? That's me unwrapping in the lolly, right? So what it was, I was at a kid's party today, and at the end, when they're dishing out the goodie bags, they had some spare, and they're like, oh, would you like one? Do you want to take one as well? I was like, yeah, I'll have it. And it's pretty much just sweets. That's all it was in there. But there's a lollipop, and I want to eat the lollipop while I'm doing my podcast, because I like lollipop. I've got a sweet tooth. I won't lie to you. So at the end of the podcast, this has nothing to do with Christmas. Don't get upset. At the end of the podcast, I'm going to tell you what flavour it was. So now's your chance to guess what flavour lollipop I'm eating. You might be able to tell what flavour it is just by the way I talk with a lollipop in my mouth. Anyway, a bit before we finish it. I bet that sounds awful, doesn't it? I'll have to listen back to it. I might have to edit it out. This is the bit before theme music. Run the theme music.
What's this? What's this?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you.
What's this? What's this?
Well, just me and my trusty old Red Ryder Carbine Action 2 on the Sharp Range Model Air Rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast with your host, Jack.
He's an angry elf.
Hello, you beautiful people! Goodness me, how are you? How have you been? Oh, this is the interactive bit. We're doing it now. Here we go. Are you ready? How are you? How have you been? That was it. This episode, I've had a couple of emails, actually. Before that, do you remember 2 episodes ago, I did the bit about the German smoker ornaments? Do you remember someone had sent me, I think it was Ellery Haney, I hope it was, sent me a picture of their German smoker ornament, and then I did a segment on it. And there was a bit, when I was researching it, a couple of places I read this, Wikipedia was one of them, where they talked about the world's largest smoker ornament, or German smoker ornament. It's not obviously not an ornament, because it's massive. It's like, you know, like 10 foot tall. So here's the thing, right? I thought, do you know what? I thought I'd find out a bit more about that. It might be interesting. Went on the Guinness World Records website, okay? Searched for it, and I searched loads of different terms, right? So I searched, you know, obviously German smokerman, and there was a Rauschermann or smoker ornament, and I even searched for the town where it was supposed to be, right? Couldn't find it. So I actually emailed the Guinness World Records and waited for them to get back to me, right? I'm eating my lollipop. And they got back to me and said, we don't have any record of that record. So there you go. So that proves my research, do you see? So I'm not like one of these just spouts any old drivel that I find. So I actually researched my research. So I'm quite proud of that I didn't tell you about this world. I mean, it probably is the one in the Wikipedia article, probably is the world's biggest German smokerman ornament, but it's not in the Guinness Book of Records, which is what it said on Wikipedia. So there you go. Citation needed. Whatever that means. Right, so I've had a couple of emails. Oh, right, I've had one from a new listener called Kay Hunt. I'll read out what she said, actually. She put, I say she, it's just K, the letter K, so it could be a chap or a lady, I don't know. Right, it said, just heard about your podcast this week and went to check it out. Right, where's that? Where did she hear about my podcast? Do you reckon it was like a bunch of people in a pub talking about it, probably, wasn't it? Do you think? No, it wasn't. It was probably on another Christmas podcast, actually. Because I can't imagine anywhere else anyone would talk about this. Right, sorry, here we go. I wanted to start from the very beginning, but noticed there was no episode 1. So I started with the first episode I could find, number 2, but I wonder where episode number 1 is. And then she put, as a year-round Christmas junkie, I'm excited to find another Christmas podcast that goes year-round. So I replied saying, well, there's a bit of a story behind that, and I'm going to tell you the story now. The first episode, I recorded it, and then I put it up online, and then I realised how bad it was. Mainly because I didn't have a pop filter. That was one of the first things I needed, was a blooming pop filter. Like the first 2 episodes, I didn't have a pop filter. So I recorded a little disclaimer. This is a while after it had gone out, right? And it just said, this is the first episode. I haven't got a pop filter since I recorded this episode. I've bought a pop filter. Don't hold it against me. If you don't like it, it does improve in later episodes, right? It never did improve, but at least I had a pop filter. But that is the bit that went on to become the bit before the theme music. So every episode I have the bit before the theme music. Originally that was me apologising for the quality of the show. Anyway, I went back and listened to episode 1 again a while later, and the problem was it was half decent, but only half decent. And I know you probably think, yeah, but most episodes are only half decent. Well, if that's the case, then this was half. It was quarter decent in that case, right? And I just thought, do you know what? I can't leave it out there. Because if people go in and think, oh, do you know what? I listened from episode one, they wouldn't listen to episode two. They'd just be like, oh, no, this is trolley. I'm not going to listen to any more of it. So what I had to do was just delete that. If I haven't deleted it, I had to turn the episode off. So you can't actually, I think you could probably find it on some websites. I don't know, maybe Podbay. There's a couple where I think you can still get it, because I do still get occasional downloads of episode one. But my general RS feed, you cannot find that episode. So what I thought I should do is record another disclaimer to go in front of the other disclaimer saying, look, don't expect, because I think, to be honest, I think I have improved to a mild degree. I'm not saying a lot, don't get me wrong, you know, this isn't a classy affair. I'm sitting here sucking a lollipop. Have you guessed what flavour it is yet? Probably not. I'm sitting there sucking a lollipop, doing a podcast in my living room while cars go by as loud as they can out in the street. And hang on, I'm not going to go on about how bad my podcast is. I just want to say, if you're a fairly new listener, I don't know how new you are, you know, I can't even remember when I turned off episode one. If you want to go back and listen to episode one, it should be going live around the same time that this one goes live. Okay, so it's out there now, or should be about now. So if you've never listened to episode one, now's the time to listen to episode one. Are we cool? Big thank you to Kay Hunt. Do you know, I've been meaning to sort out episode one for a while, actually put another disclaimer at the front of it, but I never got around to it. But this has sort of inspired me to actually get off my backside and do it. Having said that, I will be sat on my backside while I do the disclaimer and all that lot. How long are we into the podcast? We've been like, what, 10 minutes and I've done nothing about Christmas. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Hey, jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell. You lads, you'll love 'em. I'll love 'em. We'll love 'em. We'll love the you lads, the you lads, the you lads, those you lads. Yeah. Now, I want to share with you an excerpt from an email I received from a gentleman by the name of Travis Gunstall. Hope I said that right, Travis. He's a Canadian gentleman, and he's put, I just wanted to say thanks for the great podcast. I don't think that's aimed at me. That must be aimed at a good podcast, but I'm not quite sure how that got in there. I love listening, and I love the Yule Log segment. In brackets, seriously, I do. I always look up the Yule Log at the end. So thank you for that, Travis. It was a lovely email he sent, actually. I want to say that. So thank you, Travis, and thank you for listening. And this episode, just for you, and when I say just for you, it's for everyone. So it's not just for you, but just for you, Travis, I'm doing a Yule Log. I didn't do one last week, nearly did, and then didn't. I nearly did. I was thinking, I looked up a couple, and I thought, I can't do it. I cannot do it every episode. It wouldn't be fair on the people that don't like it. And I can tell you one person who don't like it. That's me, boys and girls. Actually, I sort of do like it. I don't know. It's a pretty easy segment to do. I won't lie to you. All right, here we go. This episode's version of the Yule Log is the This Is Us Yule Log. Now, I don't know if you watch This Is Us. Most people do, and you should. I don't know if I ever did it as a recommendation. I wouldn't be surprised if I did, though, because it's such a good show. I'll tell you the thing about This Is Us, right? I could be watching an episode, and I'd say nearly 50% of episodes, I'm sort of close to tears. It's that moving. It's unbelievable how it gets me. And the wife sits again. Oh, you're getting choked up. That's what happened. Seriously, I don't know what it is, but I like that show. I love it. It's great. So this was taken from season 2, episode 14, and the episode is called Super Bowl Sunday. And what's interesting is the episode aired on Super Bowl Sunday in February of 2018, directly after the Super Bowl. And this is also interesting, this episode was the highest rated scripted entertainment telecast on television since the 2008 post-Super Bowl episode of House. So that's also interesting, possibly. I don't know what your opinion on that is. If you think it's interesting, I don't care. Actually, do you know what? The annoying thing is, I'm reading this off Wikipedia, so it's probably rubbish anyway. We've established that, haven't we? Citation needed, baby. Citation needed. Anyway, if you haven't watched This Is Us, I don't want to spoil it for you because it's a fantastic show. So if you haven't watched This Is Us, maybe flip forward about 5 minutes. Maybe that should be enough. It's not going to be a long segment, so it doesn't spoil anything for you. Now, here's the deal. If you have watched it, you'll know that Jack, the three kids' dad, dies at the end of season 2. and he dies in a house... No, he doesn't die in a house fire, actually. That's the point, isn't it? He doesn't die in the house fire. He dies after the house fire from smoke inhalation. So this Yule log, it starts off with him on the roof, and he can hear the dog inside the house, and he's like, I've got to go back in and get the dog. And they go, oh, don't go back in, Jack. And he's going, oh, I can hear the dog. I'll be back. I'll be fine. Stand back. You don't care about all that bit. Then it's literally an hour long of, I think it's even less than a second. I'd say it's less than a second looped continuously for a whole hour. Do you want to do the maths on that? How many times it is? It's 60 times 60. What's that, kids? Go. 360? It's more than that, isn't it? 3,600? It's got to be, hasn't it? Let me do the maths quickly. 3,600. So, do you know what? I had to pause that. It took me 4 hours. I had a pen and paper scratching it down. I know you think I just did it in my head. I did not. No, 4 hours. 4 hours. I've been to the toilet 3 times since. Should we just... Okay, it was 3,600 times you're watching the same little bit of footage. And then at the very end, spoiler alert, Jack bursts out of the house and they all live happily ever after until about an hour later when Jack dies in the hospital. One of the saddest things I've ever seen on TV. I think that made me cry, actually. So that's this episode's Yule log. To be honest, nothing Christmassy about it at all. Which is funny, because the Darth Vader one I did, this has just got sound effects of a fire burning, like crackling and wood and that sort of stuff. Right? And like the Darth Vader one was exactly the same, but there's something about the Darth Vader one that I thought was Christmassy, even though that didn't have Christmas music. I don't know why I found that more Christmassy than this one. But this one I did not find Christmassy at all. I suppose you could put your Christmas music on in the background. Thing is, this is awful, isn't it? It was such a bad scene. I remember watching it. You're so tense because you didn't know. You thought he died in the fire. Then he gets out and it's like, you're so relieved. And then he's going to die anyway, because we already knew pretty much halfway through season one you find out that he's already passed away. So if you want to watch that Yule log, it's very simple. Go to YouTube. This is us, Yule log. I'll put a link on Facebook like I normally do. But this is what it says. It was uploaded by someone called Pearl Arteta, I don't know. It's only had 2,500 views. Of course, that's going to skyrocket now that I'm sending all you guys to go and watch it. And it says, one mesmerising hour of crackling fire sounds for the This Is Us Netflix series superfan. And what I found interesting about that is the first thing I thought was, that's not a Netflix show. That's like on Prime and Disney Plus, but it's not on Netflix. Turns out it is on Netflix in the US. So I stand corrected. Citation needed. So that's this episode's version of the Yule log. Travis, you can run off and have a look at it. I hope you enjoy it. You probably won't, but you know, it's up to you. Yeah, let's do something else. Let's do this. What the dickens? So last episode was the first time I did this segment. The response was unprecedented. It was like all of my listeners emailed, because I got 4 emails. So yeah, 4. And last I thought I only had 3 listeners. Turns out I got 4. All 4 of those listeners emailed. I want to read out one of those emails to you. Here it comes. So this came from Belinda Grapefruit. I'm guessing she's either married to or the sister of Barry Grapefruit. It says, Dear Jack, usually I listen to your podcast each month to see how much worse it has gotten since the previous episode. I was shocked to discover that you fell ass backwards into something of quality with your Dickens segment in the latest episode. This was the best thing you have produced since the show began in what feels like decades ago. I hope you will continue creating these segments, explaining some of the more confusing and obtuse parts of A Christmas Carol, though I suspect you won't because you have the attention span of a goldfish. And we'll move on to some new piece of rubbish next month. Keep up the work. Belinda Grapefruit. So there we go. That was from Belinda Grapefruit. But I also got this one. This came from Dan Carlson of Burley Boards. He's our Total Christmas Podcast Workshop elf. And he's put, I enjoyed your latest episode and I really liked the bit where you explained things from A Christmas Carol. I didn't know that bakers would let other people use their ovens on a Sunday. That is really cool. There are certainly some old-timey sayings and descriptions of how they lived back then that deserve a closer look. And then he's put, one such saying is hands down your favourite part of the whole movie or book, as far as I can tell, and it's a word I've never understood, and it throws me off every time I hear it and when you talk about it. What does it even mean when the boy in the street calls out, Walker. Well, I'm not going to cover that in this episode, but I definitely will cover it in a future episode. It's funny, because I actually researched it over a year ago. About a year and a half ago. I'd looked into it and found out where it comes from, but I never talked about it on the podcast. I don't know why, but I will do as part of this segment in an upcoming episode. I also got an email from Scott Newman, our US correspondent and the host of Jingle Jank. If you're not listening to Jingle Jank, why not? Sort yourself out. He's also the host of Tinsel Tunes. And if you're not listening to Tinsel Tunes, why not? Sort your act out. And he said pretty much the same thing about how much he enjoyed the segment. And also, I got an email from our anonymous technology correspondent. And he put, just wanted to let you know that I loved the new section of the Dickens Dictionary, or Dickensionary, if you will. That's not a name I'm going to be using for the segment, but thanks anyway. And he wanted to add a little related fact of his own. Now, so do you remember how last episode I was talking about how bakers would let people cook their food in their ovens for a small fee on a Sunday? Well, apparently the reason people use the offcuts of a crust on a pie, and then you drape them over the top of a pie in like a sort of pattern or whatever, or design, the reason they do that is so that they knew whose pie was whose when it came out of the oven. So there you go. So thank you for sending that one through, our anonymous technology correspondent. I really appreciate it. So this episode, I'm talking about three different parts. Now, the first one, won't lie to you kids, one, it's got nothing to do with Christmas. Two, it's not even in a Christmas carol, but I really wanted to share it with you. And that is the saying, what the Dickens, which is what this segment is called. So I thought I'd talk about it just briefly. Now, some of you would think, just like I did, that what the Dickens is referring to Charles Dickens. It's not. It was actually used as far back as definitely the 1590s, over 200 years before Charles Dickens was even born, because it appears in the play The Merry Wives of Windsor by William Shakespeare. And there's a line where Mistress Page says, "I cannot tell what the Dickens his name is." So that phrase has been used since then. So it's sort of like when you might say, "Oh my gosh," or "Jeepers Creepers," or "Crikey." A long time ago, most swear words were religious swear words, and so people would swear by saying things like, "Oh my God," or "Jesus Christ," or "What the devil's going on?" And so that's why these things were sort of softened to "Oh my gosh," or "Jeepers Creepers," or "Oh crikey." And "what the Dickens" is actually a contraction of the saying "what the devilkins," and the devilkins was sort of like a euphemism for devil. So instead of saying "what the devil," you'd say "what the devilkins," just like you'd say "oh my gosh" instead of saying "oh my god." So that's where it originated from. The one thing I will say is, although it didn't originate because of Charles Dickens, it probably does owe its longevity to the fact that Charles Dickens was so famous. And that's why the saying has stuck around all these hundreds of years, and people do still use it occasionally. Do you know what I mean? It's not really common, but it is still used. So there you go. That is what the Dickens means, which again has nothing to do with Christmas. Now, I have two interesting bits for you that come from one clip I'm going to play from A Christmas Carol. So, here it is.
Old Marley was as dead as a doornail. Mind, I don't mean to say that I know of my own knowledge what there is particularly dead about a doornail. I might have been inclined myself to regard a coffin nail as the deadest piece of ironmongery in the trade. But the wisdom of our ancestors is in the simile, and my unhallowed hands shall not disturb it, or the country's done for. You will therefore permit me to repeat emphatically that Marley was as dead as a doornail.
So, as dead as a doornail, and Dickens is clear in the fact that he has no idea why we use that phrase. Well, Charles, I'm going to tell you. This is where it comes from. And it is old. It is very old. That phrase is even older than what the Dickens. It goes back as far as 1350, when it was used in a poem by a gentleman by the name of William Langland. So I'm going to tell you why we say as dead as a doornail. Now, there's a technique that was used to strengthen doors when you'd nail into them. Now, doors, don't forget, are made of a number of planks of wood put together. You wouldn't get just one big sheet of wood for your door, because trees aren't as wide as that. So they'd have to be joined together. Now, what you do is you'd have strengthening supports going across, but when you'd bang the nails in, the nails would be banged all the way through the wood, so there's a bit protruding on the other side. Then what you'd do is you'd get a pair of pliers and hold the lower part of the bit that's protruding and tap the top bit over, so that's at a 90 degrees angle, and then you tap with the hammer the rest of the nail all the way over, so the nail is actually going up, across, and back down into the wood, almost like a staple. That's what it would look like, that's the effect you'd have. Or like a straightened off J, if you want to imagine it that way, going back into the wood. And this technique was called deadening the nail. And the reason why it was called deadening the nail was because nails back then were really expensive. Okay, wood, not so much. Nails, very expensive. So if you've used a nail in making some furniture or building a house, that sort of thing, you could take the nails out when the house or the furniture went to ruin. You could take the nails out and they'd be reused because they were that expensive. But if you deaded the nail, you hit it all the way through, tapped it, and then tapped it back on itself, you wouldn't be able to get the nail out. And if you did get the nail out, you wouldn't be able to straighten it again without really weakening it and possibly snapping it. So that meant that the nail could never be used again, so it was a dead nail. The nails were that expensive that if there was a house that was in disrepair, they'd burn the whole thing down just so that they could get all the nails out of it. And then after it burnt down, they could fish through and collect all the nails so they could be used again. But any that were in the doors would be useless and couldn't be used again. So that is why we say as dead as a doornail. Now the other bit I want to mention is in that bit I played earlier, he says this, play it again.
But the wisdom of our ancestors is in the simile.
Now you might think that he's referring to like ancient wisdom, you know, the wisdom of our ancestors. But it's quite the opposite. In fact, he's actually making a sarcastic reference to a politician of the time, whose name was Edmund Burke, who made a speech in March of 1775 in which he appealed to the wisdom of our ancestors as being the primary reason that the American colonies should remain part of the British Empire. And clearly, Dickens completely disagreed with Edmund Burke's speech, because in his house at Gad Hill, Charles Dickens actually had an extensive library of fake books. They were completely fake, just, I'm guessing, just the edges of them, you know, or they were blank pages, I guess they were just the edges. It was a particular joke of his, because a series of these books were titled The Wisdom of Our Ancestors, and individual volumes had titles such as Ignorance, Superstition, The Block, The Stake, The Rack, which are all types of torture device, I believe, Dirt, and Disease, in which Dickens was clearly suggesting that our ancestors didn't have that much wisdom. And let's face it, there is some wisdom that's lasted through the ages, but most of it that people used to believe is trolley when you think about it. You know, like the way people used to treat diseases. To be honest, even since Dickens' time, the way they were treating diseases back then was pretty strange. But imagine what it was like for Dickens looking at the way his ancestors had behaved. So that is why he uses the phrase the wisdom of our ancestors. And I think it's great to know that Charles Dickens was actually like a really forward-thinking man. Good on you, Charlie boy. Good on you. So that is this episode's version of What the Dickens. Again, I really hope you've enjoyed it. I hope you've learned something. And I may well do this segment again next week. I might not. To be honest, I feel like I have to because the feedback for it was so good. Anyway, let's do this. In the last episode, I had a story of shame, and I mentioned while I was doing the story of shame that I had a couple of stories from friends of mine that I wanted to do on the show. Now, this first story, I fell out of touch with the chap. I'm not really big on Facebook. I know I talk about the Facebook page, but that's all I've got. I haven't actually got my own Facebook profile, you know, under my name, Jack. Well, I have actually, but I never post anything on it. I don't think I've got any friends on it actually. I should have a look. Not that I care. Because I don't do anything on it. I'm not interested in Facebook, apart from, you know, putting links up for people. Anyway, that's not important. What is important is I lost touch with this chap, but I'm going to tell you his story anyway. Now, this goes back many years. I'm just doing the maths here. We're talking 25 years ago it happened. And my mate was great. I'm not going to tell you his name. He was a great lad, but the problem was he'd let people sort of control him a little bit. And that was always going to happen. And he got this girlfriend who was a really nice girl, don't get me wrong, but she was incredibly controlling. And she lived a little way away. She lived about, I think it's about an hour and a half's drive away, something like that. Because they met because she was studying near where we live. And at Christmas, obviously she'd gone back home for Christmas. And he was going up to see her. Now, one of the things that she was very controlling about was that she'd given him a list of all these presents he had to buy for her family members, who he'd barely met. And from what I can gather, they weren't like massively keen on him. I don't think they disliked him. I just don't think they really cared either way. And he wasn't a massive present buyer anyway. Like, he had a sister, a dad and a mum. I imagine that's all he ever bought for. So this year, it's like the amount of presents he's had to buy has more than doubled because his girlfriend had given him this huge list of presents to buy. And the dutiful man that he was, he went out and he bought all these presents. And I don't think they were cheap things either. She had expensive tastes, this girl. She was quite a classy lady. And so, yeah, he'd gone out, shelled out all his hard-earned cash on these presents. So Christmas Day came and he got up, had his breakfast, loaded all the presents in the back of his car, got in his car for the hour-long drive up to see his girlfriend and her family, and decided instead just to drive around the forest. And that's what he did. He just got in his car and just drove around. And just drove. And just kept driving around. Just having a look around here, having a look there. Like, not in a massive, we're not talking like hundreds of miles. We're talking probably only like a 10-mile radius of his house. He just spent the time just driving around. And back home, his phone just, because this was before everyone had mobile phones, you know, people did have mobile phones back then, but not to the extent where everyone's got one all the time. And his girlfriend was like ringing non-stop, like, where is he, why hasn't he come up? And she's crying tears and all that lot, and he just was just driving around the forest on his own in his car. Like, I don't know how, I can't, the thing is, when he told me the story, because I was travelling, I was overseas when this happened, the Christmas this happened. So I didn't find out about it until I got back, like a few months later. And he sort of was a bit cagey about telling me the story. And I remember thinking, what a blooming hero. He stood up for himself. It's like, you know, she'd told him exactly what to do and she'd bossed him around and she'd henpecked him and he'd had enough of it and he just broke on the one day of the year where he stood up for himself on Christmas Day and he said, nope, I'm just going to drive around the forest. And I guess he missed out on having any Christmas dinner or anything. And from what I can remember, it was about 3 or 4 in the afternoon, he finally went home and his mum was like, went ballistic at him. She was another lovely lady that would control him a little bit. She went absolutely ballistic at him, and she's like, you know, you better phone your girlfriend up and tell her what's going on. So I don't know if he called her or she called him, and she's like, well, why aren't you coming, where are you, what's going on, what's going on? He's like, I'm not coming. And she's like, why aren't you coming? He's like, and I don't, this is where it sort of falls down a bit, because I can't remember what he said or what he told me, but he just wasn't gonna, she'd pushed him to his limit and she'd pushed him too far. And he finally pushed back. And that's what happened. And they sort of did patch things up. But, you know, on that one day, he sort of won and he stood up for himself. Now, the sad thing is, actually, no, I'll tell you what, I first heard that story from another mate and then I got him to tell me the story. That's it, I remember that now. Because the other mate was telling me the story and then at the end of it, he goes, yeah, the problem is, I don't think he sort of won in the long run. And when I got my mate to tell me the story, when I said to him, like, tell me what happened at Christmas, what, like, you know, at Christmas, what you did, tell me about it. And he's telling me the story, and at the end, I sort of said to him, you're a legend, you are, mate, that's fantastic. And he said, no, I realise now I hurt a lot of people that day. And it's like, oh, mate, all that work, he stood up for himself, you know, he finally pushed back, and he won the battle, but he lost the war. Because whenever he talked about it after that, it was with shame. It wasn't like, you know, he stood up for himself. It was like he hurt people. And yeah, I guess he did hurt people. But the thing is, he did a big gesture, but she did so many little gestures, just tap, tap, tapping away at him. And he stood up for himself that one time. And it broke my heart when he said, I realise now I hurt a lot of people. And do you know what? Sometimes I use that phrase as a joke. If someone's annoyed at me, goes, I realise now I've hurt a lot of people. Anyway, that's my mate's story of shame. For one day, that boy lived like a lion. So it'd be interesting, wouldn't it? It'd be interesting if you heard her side of the story and it was just her telling the story of how thoughtless and selfish he'd been. It'd be interesting, wouldn't it? Because I'm telling it as he was the hero of the story. But if you heard her side, you'd might think she was the hero and he's the bad guy. Yeah. Anyway, That's this episode's Story of Shame. Now let's see if any of you guys out there have got a story that can beat that one, because that story to me is legendary. Anyway, hope you enjoyed it. And now it's time for this.
Humbug.
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 Humbug. Bah humbug.
It's all humbug, I tell you.
Christmas a humbug, Uncle? Oh, you don't mean that, surely.
You know, I've realised that I've been taking the lollipop out of my mouth to do the talking. So you probably haven't heard much of the lolly going on, like me eating my lollipop. So you're not going to be able to figure out what flavour it is. Okay, so I'm sorry about that. But, you know, keep trying, keep thinking about what flavour the lollipop could be. Now, this episode's version of A Christmas Carol is called Brer Rabbit's Christmas Carol. Now, let me start by saying, first up, this isn't actually a Christmas Carol as such. It's like a twisted version of it. So I'll go into the storyline, but it's not like they're not just following A Christmas Carol with Brer Rabbit as, say, Bob Cratchit. You know, that's not how it works. Another thing I want to mention is this is not your Disney version of Brer Rabbit. And there's one reason why that's very good and one reason why that's very bad. The reason why that's very good is because the Disney version of Brer Rabbit was ridiculously racist. The reason why it's bad is the animation in this is absolute trolley. Now, the Disney version that came out of this was Song of the South. Like I say, ridiculously racist. Do you know how racist it is, right? You know, I don't know if you've got Disney Plus. If you watch some of the old stuff on Disney Plus, it'll have a disclaimer at the start saying, you know, this shows racial stereotypes. It was wrong then, it's wrong now. You know, so you can still watch the stuff, right? Song of the South, you can't. It's that racist. They don't even want to show it even with a disclaimer. That's how bad it is. And you can go on YouTube and watch it. I wouldn't recommend it. I saw a tiny snippet and I was not impressed. Anyway, though, that was produced in 1946, right? This came out in 1992. Nearly 50 years later, and the animation in this, compared to the 46 Disney version, is rubbish. Proper rubbish. And the problem with the animation being so bad means that they don't really get to pull off the jokes very well, you know? It's just not well animated. That should be part of the overview. I should talk about that at the end, to be honest. Now, although this isn't the Disney version, this does seem to lean very heavily on the Disney version. Like, the look of Brer Rabbit is very, the colours they've got of him, very similar to the Disney version. The animation, though, is absolute trolley. What I'll do is I'll tell you the story. Now, I don't want to tell you the whole thing, because we're here all day, and you haven't got all day, have you? You got all day? Because if you have got all day, I could talk about other stuff. No? Right, okay, yeah, okay. I'll just tell you the story of this. And like I say, in a bit of a nutshell, I'm not going to go into all the characters, all the intricacies and that sort of thing. But the deal is this. The Scrooge character in this is Brer Fox. And Brer Fox is a... he sells wood. And he's a tight git, obviously. And at the start, he refuses to buy a ticket for this show that they're putting on. And they're actually putting on a stage show of A Christmas Carol. And it's like a benefit concert for little Timmy Mouse, obviously the Tiny Tim character, who's been very ill. He won't, you know, buy a ticket for that. Also, he won't give any of his firewood to the poor people in the town. And what's really bad is his sidekick in it is Brer Bear, who apparently, from what I read in the original books, the Uncle Remus stories, Brer Bear was just like of regular intelligence. But in this, he's made out to be like a real dummy, which really they've sort of stolen again from Disney, because in Disney, the Brer Bear character was a bit of a dummy. Anyway, he's Brer Fox's sidekick, and Brer Fox is trying to get Brer Bear to sign over his cave to Brer Fox so Brer Fox can kick him out and use his cave to start a mine. So that's what's going on with him. Now, Brer Rabbit finds out about this and sets up this ridiculous scheme where they're going to try and fool Brer Fox into thinking that he's being visited by ghosts. Now, oh dear, just thinking about it now as I tell the story, I think, goodness, this is actually what it was. So Brer Rabbit goes to Brer Fox's house when he's asleep, right? And it's weird because, so the first thing he does is he turns up and he's not like the Christmas past. He's not Jacob Marley's character. He is... This is what he calls himself. This is what he says.
I am a spirit from the great beyond.
And pretty much what that is a pumpkin, like a jack-o'-lantern for the head, on a hat stand. Is it a hat stand? A coat rack? With a sheet over it, all right? And he's sort of controlling it by a stick sort of thing. And he's doing the voice. There's no correlating character in A Christmas Carol with this guy, so I don't know what that's about. Then the Jacob Marley character they have is actually Brer Fox's old mate, Brer Wolf, who apparently has died. And the way they do that is Brer Rabbit sort of does like a shadow puppet thing with his hands, and you get like this shadow of a wolf's head. And they got the magpie, who can do people's voices. He's doing the voice of Brer Wolf. Anyway, then they sort of say, oh, you're going to be visited by three ghosts, as you do. And so Brer Fox is terrified, and they say, oh, we're going to take you into the past, and we're going to fly there or something. And Brer Fox said, I don't want to do that. She's like, well, hide under the covers then or something. So he hides under the covers. A load of, like, beavers or somethings come in, chipmunks maybe, I don't know, come in, lift up his bed by like the four legs, okay, and carry him through the forest to the theatre, right? And the theatre's full of like all the villagers and that, right? Half the curtains of the theatre are drawn, okay, and they put his bed just the other side of the curtains, so everyone in the theatre can hear what's going on, but they can't see anything. And Brer Fox is in bed, and he can't see that he's in the theatre because it's really dark, okay? But that is how this carries on from there. This is what I've got to work with, kids. Okay, so then, right, the ghost of Christmas past comes up, right, and says this.
I am the ghost of Christmas past.
Long past?
No, your past. My time is gone now. Goodbye.
And that's all we see of the ghost of Christmas past, because Brer Rabbit, the old jack-o'-lantern head character thing, his ghost thing, takes over again, and he's in charge of it. So really, is he the ghost of Christmas past? I don't bloomin' know. We see a few scenes from his past. I can't go into them. I just don't want to. Okay, then you got, and this carries on. Oh, right, so then you got this subplot, right? Meanwhile, Brer Bear, he walked past when the ghosts were there, right? He's like, oh no, there's ghosts in Brer Fox's house. I better do something about this. He goes and sees the owl for some reason. The owl says, oh, I tell you who'd be good at sorting out ghosts, right? Brer Crocodile or Brer Alligator or Brer Something anyway, right? Who lives in the swamp, right? Go and see him. He'll help you out. So that's sort of going on while the whole ghosts thing is going on in the theatre behind the curtain with the audience. This is something else, isn't it? Right, so then the ghost of Christmas, okay, you get the gist with that bit. I could go into it, but you don't need me to, do you? You know, it's the ghost of Christmas past, we've done that bit. Ghost of Christmas present, yeah, then it's the ghost of Christmas yet to come. Oh, is it, or is it?
And now the last ghost, the ghost of Christmas future.
Yeah, they do that. Right. And this one, this is unbelievable, right? This one, it could just be a pile of black cloth. Okay, there's no one in the costume. And of course, it doesn't talk and it doesn't move. It literally just stays there for a, we'll probably see it for maybe a second, maybe two. And then again, it's Brer Rabbit, his old jack-o'-lantern head on a hat stand with a cloth doing all the talking again. Pretty much you just see a couple of people's graves and people crying. One of them's Brer Bear's grave because he died of hypothermia because he got evicted from his cave by Brer Fox. And the other one is Brer Fox's. It's like, look, you'll die if you keep behaving like this. It's like, well, we're all going to die sooner or later. Anyway, going back to the other subplot, right? Brer Bear is going to see the croc in the swamp, right? Turns out the croc's actually like a really nice, well-spoken gentleman. And he gives Brer Bear some stuff to deal with the situation. It's like some garlic around his neck, a bell for some reason, and this canister of burning stuff. I forget what it is now, actually. What was it?
Now, here's the smudge bucket. It's just smouldering now, but by the time you carry it back, it should be giving out large clouds of evil-smelling smoke.
Oh, yeah, that's what it was. And he's carrying that, and it's smoking, right? He, at this point, bursts into the theatre because he can hear Brer Fox, like, moaning and sort of crying because he wants to change. And he comes bursting, and he's like, don't worry, I'll save you. And he's running around, and he's sort of like got smoke going everywhere, and people are getting up and running around. And it's a bit of a mess, and Brer Fox faints, and Brer Bear takes him home, and the whole place sort of like it's just in complete disarray. And then Brer Fox wakes up at home and realizes he needs to change. Now, what's interesting is he heads into town and he's all happy. Brer Rabbit is sitting outside the theater, which has collapsed. And we never really saw the theater collapse when Brer Bear was running around with his smoking canister thing. So it's a bit bigger than we sort of realized at the time, and it's all been destroyed. And he tells Brer Fox that it was all just a ruse and he just set it up, and Brer Fox doesn't care. But Brer Rabbit is all like, oh, but we can't have the show tonight to raise the money for Timmy. And Brer Fox is like, here, have the money. Have the money that you would have got for all the tickets you would have sold. And he's like throwing wads of cash at Brer Rabbit. And then, yeah, pretty much it's sort of all redeemed, you know, and he has a big party at the end. And Brer Alligator, or Brer Croc, or whatever his name is, he has a party, and everyone goes around there, and everyone loves Brer Alligator as well, who, you know, was sort of misunderstood, and no one ever went in his... There's a bit in it where they say, oh, no one ever comes out of Brer Alligator's swamp, and it's like, yeah, because no one ever goes in it, because everyone's scared of it. But then when they actually do go and see him, they realise he's a really nice guy, so that's nice as well. So, thank goodness I've managed to get through that. It was Trolley. What's annoying, right, is... If the animation had been better and slicker and more action to it, more movement or cleaner, I don't know quite how. I'm not an animator, you know, I'm just a critic, so it's easy for me to tell them what they were doing wrong, even though I don't know exactly what they were doing wrong. But if the animation was better, some of the jokes would have worked better, because actually, there's actually a few funny jokes in there. But the problem is, they're not executed well because the animation's so poor and clunky. Yeah, and I'd actually try and explain a couple of the jokes, or I could play them for you, but they play out so long that the humour's lost, sadly. Yeah. I mean, the other characters are generally forgettable. We only see little Timmy Mouse right at the very end, actually, and he turns up, he's fit and healthy again already, which is nice, on Brer Fox's hat. Yeah, he's only tiny Timmy Mouse, yeah, tiny Tim. That's pretty much it. This is one of those where I couldn't really research it a massive amount, and the research I did do just didn't turn up much because it's such a lightweight affair. But one thing I did learn, and this is quite sad actually, is a lot of the animation was done in Ireland, but the animators never actually got paid. So yeah, one of the comments I was reading is someone like, yeah, we worked on that, my company worked on that, and I don't know why it says it was made by this company, because that company never actually paid us any money, and it was some other company that sort of owned the whole thing. That's what they were saying. So it was really interesting. They never got anything out of it. I mean, I don't know how much money they would have made, because it was like just a VHS jobby. Don't think it was ever shown on TV, and it was pretty poor. Which, do you know, if it was from the 80s, you'd understand it. You know, this was like the early 90s. Now, this was a time when Disney were releasing things like The Lion King or Beauty and the Beast, you know, where the animation was incredible. And then you got this, which was proper naff. So, yeah, I don't really know what else to say about it, really. You know, I can't... It's one of those. Normally, I watch the versions of A Christmas Carol 2 or 3 times. Okay, even if it's like a feature-length film, I watch it 2 or 3 times. This one, I watched it once. I didn't really want to sit through it a second time, so I sort of just cursory brushed over it in the background while I was doing other stuff. I couldn't sit down with a pen and paper jotting down all the notes because I was just so bored by it. Yeah. So there you go. That's this episode's version of A Christmas Carol. Won't lie to you, my review was pretty naff, so why not go and watch it yourself and you can review it yourself. How's that? I'll put the link on Facebook. Let's do this. This episode's recommendation is a BBC Radio 4 series called Sedaris. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with David Sedaris. You should be. He is a fantastic writer. He generally mainly writes short stories, normally based on his life. Now, I first became aware of him. This is interesting because it was years ago, mid-90s maybe? Maybe late 90s? No, early 2000s. It's probably about 20 years ago. I was in South America and I was backpacking and I met this girl who was reading this book, and she sort of read a bit out to me because it was really funny, and it always stuck in my head, just this little excerpt she read. And then coming back to nearly 20 years, I started listening to This American Life, and I was listening to all the back episodes from like the mid 90s, and on it was this story being read out by the author, that this girl had read out a bit of it to me, and I recognised it straight away. I thought, oh, there we go. Since then, I've listened to a lot more episodes of This American Life, and I've listened to a lot more of input on those shows, and it got me interested in his work, and so I bought one of his books, and I've borrowed a couple of other ones of his books from the library. The recommendation, though, is his BBC radio show. Now, he lives in the UK now, but he's from the States, and his sister is actually Amy Sedaris. I don't know if you've heard of her, but she was in the recent series of Boba Fett, and she was in The Mandalorian, among other things. She's been in loads of crap. Anyway, he's had 4 seasons of his radio show in the UK. Each episode is half an hour long, and there's 10 episodes per season, so it's 40 episodes. You can find them online. I will put the link up on Facebook, and it's fantastic to listen to. It's literally just him reading his short stories or excerpts from his diary to an audience. Like I say, each episode half an hour long, and it's just really nice to listen to. Check out Sedaris. If you've already read all of his stuff, then you don't really need to check it out. If you haven't, it's a great way to get into it. I think you'll enjoy it. To be honest, I'm reading his books, and at the same time, I've been listening to the episodes, like, gradually. Because there's only 40 episodes, I just don't want to listen to, like, the whole lot in one go, and then I'm like, oh, great, I've got none left. So I've been listening to some, like, one or two a week, and it's fantastic, because sometimes it is stories that I might have even read, like, you know, a few days earlier, or a week or so before, and I'm hearing it in his voice, and it's really good. So that is this episode's recommendation. It's called Sedaris, and it is a radio show on BBC Radio 4. And that is it for this episode. I really hope you've enjoyed it. I don't know what else to say, really. It's just the usual, isn't it? You know, I sat here talking, you sat there listening. Now it's over. For another fortnight. Does that make you feel sad? Hope it doesn't. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you feel happy, if anything. Hope you listened to this and it just sort of made you feel a bit of joy. That would be nice. Whenever I get an email from someone saying that they like the podcast, it makes me think of the podcasts that I like listening to. And I think if I can give that feeling to people to listen to my podcast, the same feeling that I get when I listen to other podcasts, then that's pretty good. I've achieved something. I haven't achieved much, but I've achieved something. Anyway, if you want to get in touch, please, please do, because that's pretty much all I live for, your emails. And when I get an email, like the one I got from Travis, like that's someone brand new emailing me. It's fantastic hearing from someone new. It's just nice to have human interaction from all around the world and people that share a common interest, their love of Christmas. And what better common interest to have? I'll be back again in 2 weeks' time. In the meantime, you know I love you. Merry Christmas! My lollipop was cola flavoured. And it was very nice, actually. I really liked it. So, there you go. Merry Christmas.